Good evening, all my lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. Tonight's creative is Raleigh Keegan. Raleigh is a country music singer based out of Nashville. He is a young man with an old soul who may or may not have secretly played trombone in high school. Normally, I would say grab your cup of coffee or your favorite beverage and cuddle up with me. But first, it is Earth Month, and in honor of our Mother Earth, I'm going to read you a little something from the Eco Hero Handbook by Tessa Wardley. The question is, how can I help raise environmental awareness? And the solution is, we need to keep talking about environmental issues. Educational institutions, workplaces, youth centers, and churches provide opportunities to reach a large group of people at once. Also, e-zines and podcasts such as BioFriendlyPlanet.com are another wonderful place to get information about how we can help our beautiful Mother Earth. Now, grab that cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host, Pup, sit back, enjoy the show.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. I'm listening while I'm watching your videos and like, so glad that you're here and talking to me. I'm in love with your music, by the way. It's smoothie. So are you in Nashville?
My wife and I are just outside of Nashville. So we live out a little bit outside in the country, and I drive into Music Row, you know. But I mean, back when you used to drive into town, now everything's online.
Right. You walk to your computer.
I walk to my fridge, to my computer, to my bed.
That's about it.
Yeah.
But Nashville's where you want to be for your music career, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I feel like it's the most natural fit for me. I certainly don't want to move to New York City or LA. I've been to New York City a few times and it's so overwhelming. People who live there say they really like it.
But it's such a big pool.
Yep.
But,
there's like, and Nashville's getting that way too. Like Nashville's getting like, I don't know. It's people from LA are moving to Nashville because LA is crazy expensive.
We need to create somewhere like, I don't know, Bend, Oregon or something. Just have a new one. Well, Atlanta like lit up just in the past, 10 years or so.
Yep.
Film wise. I mean, with The Walking Dead, now movies are being filmed there more. So it's kind of nice to get out of like the stereotypical, everything has to be filmed in LA, unless you want it to look like you're in Scotland or, you know, New Zealand. Then you go to like Montreal, you know, you go to Canada. So it's nice to spread out a little bit more over the US.
Is that a trick? Is that a trick that I don't know, that in order for them to make those scenes that look like they're in Europe or New Zealand, they go to Canada?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So they don't actually go to New Zealand?
No, you know, like so many American shows that you think are based in another country, it's like Edmonton, you know, it's
really?
Montreal.
It's a big trick.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's because of cost or if it's just because the environment or the locale is what they're looking for without spending that, you know, overseas money.
One of my favorite movies is Lord of the Rings, and I'm wondering if they...
No, they did. They did. They spent 4 years in New Zealand. Josh Gad has this series. It's on YouTube called Reunited Together Apart, I think it is. And he did a Lord of the Rings that, first of all, I just smiled through the whole thing because it was amazing. And it was Ian McKellen, Orlando Bloom, Liv Tyler,
Elijah Wood,
Sean Astin, and Peter Jackson, and I think his wife or partner, they were all there, like just all these little Zooms, right? And they talked about it. They lived like in New Zealand for, I want to say 4 years or something like that. I mean, all of them, everything, Viggo Mortensen, Sean Bean, everybody, they lived there.
Do you imagine the budget they had to have had for that?
Millions and millions.
Millions and millions and millions.
That was, that was made back in spades.
Oh, certainly. On me alone.
Yeah, right. Just on my rental.
Just on my streaming.
So yeah, they trick you, and then sometimes, like in that production, they did it, and I think Lost did that as well, didn't they? Didn't they stay in Hawaii the whole time?
That's a great question. I didn't know if Lost was actually filmed there or not.
I think so. So you have to pay attention. They're tricky.
Yeah, I don't know. I just get lost in them.
No pun intended. So you're in Nashville now. Where did you start out? Where are you from? Okay,
so I grew up, was adopted and grew up right outside Cincinnati. I had awesome parents. And then I did music as a kid and stuff. Went to play college football. Mm-hmm. That was in Kentucky. So I moved to Kentucky, met a girl named Shelby, who became my wife later. And we lived in Lexington for a couple years before we moved here. And that's a very short version, but that's where I come from. What about you? Where do you come from?
I come from a little bit of everywhere, but I am in Florida right now. I'm on the Space Coast, you know, where the rockets go up.
Yeah.
You know, we send people to Mars around here. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, around here.
My aunt and uncle live in Lexington, actually. They've been there for years and years and years.
I really love Lexington. It's one of my favorite places.
It is beautiful there. So you were born and grew up around Cincinnati, you said. So you're a Reds fan, you're a Bengals fan.
I was. I mean, it's hard now because I don't have much time to watch it. And then I was a Bengals fan, but I don't know if you know anyone who was a Bengals fan. It's horrible being a Bengals fan. Mm-hmm. They break your heart every year.
Oh, it's like being a Dolphins fan. I'm not one, but I feel bad for people that are.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Like, I just gave up on them. And that's a horrible thing, but it was every year, year after year, the same thing would happen. Mm-hmm. And so I was just I quit.
Yeah.
And then I played football in college and kind of got burnt out on sports and stuff and became obsessed with music. So
so you went to school on a sports scholarship?
I did. I went awesome. On, and then I got an exercise science degree.
Which is basically
doesn't help me now.
I mean, does that help you be to do physiotherapy or
I was going to be a physical therapist, but chemistry and physics.
Yeah.
That was a no.
Yeah. The physics will get you.
Physics was awful.
So you graduated college with a degree that you really didn't. And you said, you know what? My passion is singing. My passion is music.
Yeah.
And you ran with it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I always played growing up. My parents got me and my brother our first piano, and we took lessons for a couple of years and stuff. Then I was playing trombone and middle school and high school. And I was first chair in the state in jazz trombone. So I played jazz. I love that. Mm-hmm. And I almost tried to go to college for that.
So you were a band geek?
I was total band, but it was deceptive because I really wanted the girls to like me. Mm-hmm. So I played the sport and faked I love the sport. But really every day at lunch, I would leave early and no one would know where I would go. And I would go to play my trombone just to play by myself or play piano by myself. And no one knew I did it.
It would have been scandalous.
It would have been scandalous because I was on the homecoming court and all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
All the things that you think matter back then. But
right.
Yeah.
So you play piano, trombone.
I play guitar, harmonica. I had a drum set and I was okay at drums, but my parents said no to that because I was beating the crap out of those things.
At 11 o'clock at night. And they're like, go to bed.
Yep, they weren't having it.
You said your brother took the lessons as well. Is he a musician? Or
we are both adopted from different families, and we could not be more different. I don't know if it's possible for us to be more different. I mean, he's 5'10 with red hair. I'm 6'4, brown hair. He played volleyball, water polo, and swimming. I played basketball, football, and baseball. He played cello, so he was in the orchestra, and I played trombone. And we are just so weirdly different. I would say he was probably smarter than me when we were younger, so he didn't have to try as hard at school. Yeah, he played the cello. I think he was always mad because I was secretly better than
secretly.
Him.
now you're publicly
now I'm better. Publicly better than I was me and my brother were really competitive.
So being adopted, the both of you, it kind of brings in that argument of nature versus nurture. Even being brought up the same way with the same lessons and the same attention paid to you, still something in your individual innate natures took you a little bit different directions. And that's great.
Weird.
I mean, it's the uniqueness of each individual human. You know?
Right. It's you can't completely escape your biology, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what happens to you matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens to you, your experience, that nurture side of it. I don't know which one's more important, but I feel like they're both.
I think I would say they're equally important, honestly.
Yeah, it seems that way to me too. I don't know. That's such an interesting debate, or not even a debate, just discussion.
Conversation, yeah.
Yeah.
But I like that you're so public about adoption. Is that something that you're passionate about?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I got to meet my birth mom a few years ago. And one of the reasons was just to thank her because mm-hmm. she gave me a chance, you know.
Right.
I found out that I had a half brother who was in and out of the foster care system, and he had a really rough go of it. But my mom, I was really grateful because she was clean when she had me and she gave me a chance, you know, mm-hmm. like she wanted better for me. It was really hard for her too. I mean, she wanted to let me know that my birthday was the hardest day of the year for her. She always wondered if she made the right decision. And I'm very glad that I got to meet her and tell her that she did. So I'm a big proponent of it. I know that's not everyone's experience. I know like some people have it hard, and that's one of those nature versus nurture things. Like I'm not sure I would recommend every person to meet their biological parents. Like I think it's very individual. I think some people are affected different ways by different things.
Right. And sometimes you're shocked with what you discover. I read an article, a woman went, what is that test? 23andMe or whatever.
Yep.
And somehow through that, I don't know how the science works. She found out that her birth father is like on the FBI's most wanted list for murder. And I'm like, that'd be something I wouldn't want to know.
It's funny that you said that because my birth grandfather was FBI's most wanted people too for robbing bank, not murder.
I was going to say, maybe it's the same guy.
No, I was like, that would be weird.
It's a bank robber.
He was a bank robber. I always thought it was a joke for a while, but my birth mom, before she passed away a couple of years ago, she told me, yeah, it's sad. She told me that her dad, when he was on the run, would come and show up in disguises and stuff.
Oh my God.
At family functions. And I was like, no way, this is insane.
I wonder what kind of disguises, like a clown costume or like.
That's a great question. And I'll probably see them again. I mean, it's been bad because of COVID, but like I got to meet my grandmom, you know, so that was really sweet. She's very sweet.
So and that was her husband? That was the banker?
Her husband. And then, so my mom's family, she's got a brother and two sisters. So I got to meet all of them. I got to meet my half brother.
Older or younger?
He's a year and a half older than me. And I don't know if he's still doing it full time, but he was a full time poker player in Vegas.
Like really?
Really interesting guy.
Like, is he on that poker show? Like,
I think he does well. His name's Keith. He's a super interesting guy. We look like each other, but he's like darker complexion and we're both 6'4". I mean, mm-hmm. It's weird. It's very strange. It's strange how genetics work.
Oh, your grandfather, did they catch him?
They caught him.
Oh, so he's in the pokey, huh? Or he was?
Yeah, he was in, I guess federal prison. I mean, you can look, I'm not saying anything you can't look up. Like it's on Google and
you can email me later.
I'll email you. Yeah, I'll email you some links.
Because it'll be on the internet. Raleigh Keegan's grandfather, criminal.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't run in the family.
Hey, all right. That's basically what my song, Long Line of Lovers.
I like that song.
Come from a long line of lovers. My mama loved another and daddy loved 100 proof. That song was inspired by my family. Just and then my wife, you know, of course, being such an integral part of my story and me not, you know, becoming
right.
Because by nature, to be honest, like by nature, I'm the black sheep. Like if you ask my wife too, she's mm-hmm. sitting in the other room, but like she would say, I walk to the beat of my own drum. I don't mm-hmm. follow social norms well. I actually suck at that. Like I would wear muscle shirts and flip-flops everywhere I would go if I could.
Why not?
If no one would care, yeah. But people care. Yeah, and my manager would kill me.
You feel that pressure to look polished.
Not polished.
Put together.
Just not like a bum.
You can't in look grubby.
Like,
yeah.
Like, well, I mean, I go to the gym, wear whatever. I mean, if it's at like an event or something, I like to not look like I'm a weirdo, you know?
Yeah, right. And people can't see, but your hair is on point first.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. That's I told you we live a little bit outside of Nashville and I get a nice $15 haircut from a great gal over here. And she's just, you know, you found somebody good and she's great. And I just put a little thing in there and just swoop it over.
Yeah.
You just swoop it over.
Looking good. Listen, I'm with you though. Like if I have to dress up to go somewhere, I'm like, I will sit in my room in a state of depression for like a half an hour. Like why?
Yes.
Why?
Yeah.
And it's like heels. No. No,
that's how I feel. I do not like dressing up. Most men don't love dressing up, I feel like, though. Or women, really.
No, yeah. And some girls are just like, they have to be put together. But that's their thing. Like, I'm wearing a Deadpool shirt and jeans right now. And that is my comfort. But if I have to, you know, if I have to go somewhere, I got to put on a dress, you know, and the stockings and heels and actually do the hair. You can see it's in a bun, but it's just like, that's a lot of work, but you have to do it sometimes.
That's right. So, you have to do it. I'm learning. Yeah, you can't skip out on all the parties. That's what I'm learning.
But if you don't go out there and promote it, if you don't go out there and perform or go to the functions or whatever and be introduced around or you know, I don't know if you still hand out CDs, sell yourself in a way, but like be in everybody's faces like, hi, look at me. Hi, I have music. You want to hear it? For you, for this is your livelihood. This is your career. This is what you do. It's not like you're a doctor and you do music on the side.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a fine line too, because it's still art. And like, to me, that's the most, like, obviously, I mean, it's just the most important thing to me is to have authentic art. So like, it's a fine line of like promoting yourself and being cringy. So it's right. Like, I think it's like about in Nashville, they say like, you have to be present to win, but there's truth to that. I think it's a relationship business in every way, relationship with fans, relationship with industry people, relationships with press, all of those groups consist of people. Mm-hmm. So it's just about like, you know, one by one, like creating relationships with people. And then you don't even have to, if you just, they'll find out, just like care more. I don't know, care more about someone else, like for a minute. And like, then they, funny little trick, then they just love you.
Right.
If you just ask, I mean, it'll change somebody's day. Like if you just ask them a question, like how are, you know?
Absolutely. It's, you're showing an interest in something outside of yourself, and most people will recognize it and appreciate it. For
yes.
Sure.
So I think at my best, that's what I'm trying to do. At my worst, I'm a cringy loser.
And yeah. going back to your point about art, I saw this woman, she writes poetry, but she said something about, hey, all you starving artists, why are you starving? Art's not about starving. She said, don't lose yourself in your passion for your art that you're hurting yourself. You deserve to be paid for what you're doing. Your art deserves to make you money. So it was kind of like, where do you merge that together? Where do you have your passion for your art, but not sell out, but still be to make a living?
That is a great question. Well, sometimes I feel like it's situational, because I feel like sometimes you have to draw a line in the sand. Mm-hmm. You have, for me as a person, if I'm not writing and performing and releasing and singing songs that set me on fire, then like, I'm going to feel dead inside. So that's not a negotiable thing for me, as far as like, if it took me singing a song that makes me feel that way to make it, it wouldn't be worth it to me, because I would lose myself along the way. But then the other side of the thing is also true. Like it's a very complex question, because for hundreds or thousands of years, like, creatives have always had a hard time monetizing their work. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about it. Like, I think there's this guy named Jordan Peterson, who's a psychiatrist or something like that. And he talks about how it's hard because the way that a creative brain is wired, it doesn't have much structure or order to it. Whereas like a business-minded person typically has a higher capability for order and structure. Mm-hmm. But like, that doesn't lend itself to high creativity. So it's like you give and take. So for me personally, what I try to do is write whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And that's, I'm just talking about me. I'm not saying that my way is the right way, even though it is. I'm kidding. But I just write what I want. And I hire the business people who do the business thing well, better than me. Let the cards fall where they're going to fall, because I'd rather do that. I'd rather take a chance on being unique and different, mm-hmm. and go and be really big or nothing at all. I'd rather do that than be in between
and be mediocre.
I mean, that's just my thing. Like, I've always been competitive. So I'm always going to try to, number one, beat myself. But I'm going to listen to the Chris Stapletons and the Miranda Lamberts and the Beatles and John Mayer and all these great artists. And I want my music to stand up and be better. Like, I want it to be better. And I don't want to work for that, you know? And so that's part of it for me. But did that answer the question, you feel like?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. And, actually a lot of it. I feel like what you're saying also is when you find yourself making music that you're just not feeling. I mean, like you said, it makes you feel dead inside, but it's hit and you're just like, I think that's the point where you feel like a sellout almost.
When you know, mm-hmm. when you know intrinsically. You know, there is certainly, like, for me at least, like that inner voice. And I, what I've been describing it as is, like, when I'm writing or creating or whatever, I'm always just asking the question, do I like this? And that's that little inner voice. Like, it'll tell you, if you listen to it, like, it'll tell you this is wrong or this is right. And it could be that thing that makes you go, oh, this is a little icky for me. Like, this is not true to my, what they would call brand. But for me, it's like my self-identity. Like, this isn't, but yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point you made about people know when they're not being authentic, but money's a hell of a drug. You know, it can suck the nicest of folks in, I feel like, you know.
But like when you're writing poetry or when you're writing fiction, you know, writing a song, like you're, and you stop and you go, oh, that's good. That's good. Or conversely, you go, oh, that's crap. So I think in your heart of hearts as a creative, you know what's good, you know what's bad. I think the business side of it, you know, like you said, your business people, they could like walk into the room and you're just fiddling around on the piano with something and you're like, this is lame. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's going to be huge. And you're like, God, I don't wanna.
Yep. Yeah. It's a funny thing. Have you ever thought about how it's interesting how some of the people making the decisions on behalf of the creatives know nothing about the creativity?
Yes, it's crazy.
That is a very interesting dilemma because, like, for example, that's why people like Chris Stapleton don't get a record deal for 15 years.